Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi. And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name's Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of August 11th, 2017. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Doing well. How are you doing?
That's good. And we're also pleased to be joined by our new frequent guest and author, Ms. Mariah Tinger. How are you doing, Mariah?
I'm doing well.
Good. I'm glad you're both here. So, there's so much. Oh, first of all, let me say I want to give a shout out to our guest host for the last couple of weeks, Regina McIntyre, who I hope you agree did a wonderful job hosting the podcast in my prolonged absence. I want to point out that if you liked the sound of Regina's voice, you should go hear the podcast, Sisters of Resistance. I'll put up a link to it somewhere. But she's got her own podcast, and it's pretty interesting. So go check it out. Anyway, here in the great state of Massachusetts, we consider ourselves leaders in fighting the climate crisis. We have something called the Global Warming Solutions Act, which was started in 2008. We have lots of effort on clean energy. We have lots of programs. Good things. One of the things that is the fallout from the Global Warming Solutions Act is a mandate to get to a certain amount of renewable energy, clean energy, by the year 2020. And as part of that effort to get to the mandated amount of clean energy that we use in the state of Massachusetts, an idea has come up to use essentially what is called biomass, which is a fancy term for, I think, wood, right? And so, DR, can you frame up the report of what's going on with this biomass issue?
Yes, according to the Boston Globe, the Baker administration is considering designating biomass a form of renewable energy and making biomass eligible for clean energy incentives, which has been, as you might imagine, very controversial. The Baker administration is saying that biomass is simply part of the so-called combo platter of energy that the state needs to rely upon, and that over time it shouldn't increase overall carbon emissions. Climate hawks have noted that, in fact, they wouldn't increase emissions because it would create more pollution in the form of soot, and also reduce the trees that are needed to absorb CO2, so that this is a sort of an attempt to sort of, you know, play semantics in terms of what is renewable or clean energy. And you know, just looking at it from a 35,000 foot perspective, to me anyway, branding biomass to be renewable energy as though it's the equivalent of wind and solar, it reminded me of the famous Reagan initiative to brand ketchup as a vegetable.
Well, I think you've hit on the core of it, right? Is that this is a convention that we're adopting. We're going to call biomass, which I think is like, I think the logging industry, Mariah is right, the logging industry is pushing this. It's scrap from logging industry, it's sawdust from sawmills and stuff like that. This is an agreement that we're making that this is going to be included is renewable energy. It's kind of political, right? Because there are legitimate questions about the legitimacy of this stuff as a clean energy source, right?
Yeah, so there's a bit of history here where I'm not exactly sure the date, but sometime this was last year. The Maine's Republican governor, Paul LePage, basically made a plea to our governor, Charlie Baker, Massachusetts governor, to change. There were some rules that had carried over from Deval Patrick that Massachusetts was only allowed biomass facilities that create both electricity and capture heat energy. Those are called combined heat and power plants. And only those are the ones that were allowed to be called renewable resources and receive renewable energy credits. Mm-hmm. And Maine's biomass energy market was sort of struggling without those renewable energy credits. And really, it was also being driven down by the cheap prices of natural gas, not just the loss of these renewable energy credits, but losing those credits was certainly an extra blow. So Maine's governor, LePage, met with Charlie Baker and sort of said, hey, do you think you could fix this so we can get these renewable energy credits back? And lo and behold, that has now happened. Uh-huh. And, you know, at the time when Deval Patrick put these in place, there was a lot of pressure on him to say that, you know, just burning biomass is not renewable energy. Their big problem with it was that it was not efficient enough to be considered a renewable mm-hmm. energy.
In other words, the heat, the use of the heat that you got from burning the wood couldn't be converted. When you say efficiency, it was not efficient enough to translate into power, right?
Right, exactly. They were losing the heat, and so it had to be combined heat and power in order to be considered renewable. So, and I didn't see anywhere where, you know, the people pushing for biomass not to be considered a renewable resource. I didn't see much discussion about the soot when I was looking, but I think that is a very, very big part of the discussion. It should be a big part of the discussion.
Well, tell me before. So when you say soot, I mean, describe that more, because this. So we're burning, literally burning wood to make electricity, right? And the soot is what?
Yeah. So when you burn biomass, you create these tiny little soot particles that are terrible for human health. You know, there's sort of delineations that are made about fine particulates, ultra fine particulates, and soot is about 5 to 10% of the fine particulate matter in our atmosphere. So they're really small. They're between about 0.1 and 2.5 micrometers, mm-hmm. and because they're so small, they bypass the body's filtration system. So they basically, you inhale them, they go deep, deep, deep into your lungs, all the way down to your alveoli. So like that's deep, it leads to respiratory and cardiovascular diseases. The annual deaths due to biofuel soot are about 1.5 million per year worldwide, mostly in Asia and Africa. And actually, I couldn't quite tell, but the map I was looking at, it looked like there was a tiny little portion of those deaths were in New England. Oh, nowhere really? Else in the United States, but right in New England, there was some percentage of those 1.5 million years per
so
year
you,
deaths.
So you're saying that from the burning of the biomass, which again is wood, you end up with this soot, which is a health hazard. I had read in places that the soot, which is also sometimes called carbon black, right? It's just basically
black carbon.
Mm-hmm. The sort of carbon dust you see, I guess, coming out of like a diesel engine that's burning. When you see a truck rolling down the road and all that stuff blasts out of the diesel engine, that stuff was particularly damaging to glaciers, because the black stuff lands on the glaciers, absorbs heat, and the glaciers melt faster. So that part of the destruction of the glaciers is due to this soot. And not to go too far afield, but I mean, I guess a lot of the global soot stuff comes from burning wood and cow dung in India or something, right? Because mm-hmm. there's no other way to get fuel there, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So Mark Jacobson, the Stanford University professor of civil and environmental engineering, testified in the 2000 congressional hearing that black carbon in the soot particles created from burning fossil fuels, but also burning biomass, is the second leading cause of global warming ahead of methane. And a lot of that is what you mentioned, Ted, that, you know, essentially when you have a white surface, if you walk on a white surface, it's not hot, right? The sunlight's being reflected off of it. But if you walk on a black surface, it's hot. And so if you have all these white glaciers, which are reflecting sunlight, and then all of a sudden you cover them in black, it warms them up and accelerates their melting, and also accelerates the amount of heat the Earth is absorbing, whereas it used to be reflecting it.
Yeah. I mean, there is all these interesting sort of side issues of the biomass question that Governor Baker is wrestling with here to try and satisfy the Global Warming Solutions Act, right? He's trying mm-hmm. to to find out if there's a way to include some of the biomass as part of the, this, what did you call it? The combo platter. Sounds an awful lot like all of the above hoo-ha, but I mean, it's, but I guess the other thing that I thought that was interesting as it relates to the biomass question is a couple of distinctions in terminology that are just interesting for people to carry around. That a distinction I make in my head, but other people, I mean, you guys tell me if you agree. But when we talk about renewable energy versus clean energy, I mean, it seems to me that burning biomass is in fact renewable in quotation marks, because you can always grow another tree, right? And then you get more fuel sometime in the future. But it's kind of dirty renewable energy in that you're putting this carbon up in the air, as opposed to running a solar panel where, at least in the operation, there is no, that's clean energy because there's no carbon emitted, right? Is that a distinction that is worth making?
It's an interesting distinction, and one that in an NPR report on this controversy, Charles Thompson of the Mass Forest Alliance seized upon, where he called biomass, quote, the ultimate renewable fuel, abundant, local, and growing far faster than is being used. It's a diversified energy supply, unquote. But, of course, the problem is that we're trying to go for energy supplies that don't pollute in any way. Mm-hmm. And according to this NPR story, a recent report from the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, I guess one of the last reports before Scott Pruitt gets his hands on it, notes that Massachusetts has more pollution from wood combustion than any other state in New England. Mm-hmm. And when you factor that in, when you factor the point Mariah brings up about the health impacts, the asthma impacts, this becomes in fact an environmental justice issue, because if you're near where all this wood is being burnt, you quite literally can't breathe.
Right, and they're not burning it in wealthy neighborhoods, are they?
I doubt it very highly.
Yeah, I mean, and I do think you bring up definitely an extra, a very good point there, Ted, too, with, the argument that Maine was making is, hey, look, if we're burning biomass, it means we're not burning natural gas, and it's better to burn biomass than natural gas, right? I mean, isn't that, that's that's a step in the right direction? But I think sort of one other thing is that, again, this guy, Mark Jacobson, said in his 2007 testimony that controlling soot reduces temperatures faster than controlling carbon dioxide. So in the short term, if we can control soot, we're going to bring down those temperatures and stop those glaciers from melting. And then, of course, controlling carbon dioxide is going to have the longer term climate effect. It's going to have a benefit that'll be 100 years or longer. So, not burning biomass is a really fast way to stop some of the climate change that's happening.
It's an interesting point, because I heard somewhere that this soot, which of course is S-O-O-T, right? This soot, this dust, this particulate that comes from burning things, falls out of the atmosphere in something like 3 weeks, right? It's very fast to get out of the atmosphere. So if you stop burning it, all of that impact of in terms of global warming and everything else goes away rapidly, as opposed to, and I guess this is the other sort of concept to have around biomass as a fuel source, is that, I mean, you're going to burn a piece of wood today, right, and say, oh, it's renewable, in 30 years I'll have another tree. But what you've done is to put carbon dioxide in the air, and it's going to be there unabated for 30 years. And then in 30 years, and now you're going to have another tree, and you've captured some of that carbon dioxide, fine. But it seems like a very slow response cycle to claim as a clean energy, right? Because it's, and on top of that, you have to have the discipline to actually plant a tree that follows the one you chopped down. And it doesn't seem to me that, we're building that into the process here, honestly accepting the discipline to renew the renewable resource.
Yeah.
And the other sort of concept that I think is useful to put out there in terms of the bio use of the biomass is another concept about new and old carbon. Right, Mariah, the carbon that is in the tree that you're going to burn was in the atmosphere over the last 100 years or so, right? So in other words, the tree grows, it captures carbon dioxide from the air, makes the tree, then you chop the tree down and burn it. So at some level, that's net neutral, right? The carbon that was there 100 years ago, you put back into the air, and it's going to get captured again. And that's distinct from this idea of going and digging up fossilized carbon, that is to say trees that died 65 million years ago, take them out of the ground, and now you're adding new carbon to the air. Right? So yeah. There are two different sources of carbon, and that the problem with fossil fuels is that you keep adding new carbon to the system. But I'd make the argument that given the dire straits we're in, even burning of wood, which in some sense is carbon neutral, is not good because you're putting short-term carbon into the air that you can avoid. Right?
Right.
Does that make any sense? I mean, that's kind of a long story, but
yeah, no,
right?
It does. Yeah. Wind, water, and solar. That's the way to go.
And wind, water, and solar. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, so I have all sorts of buzzwords I can't even get with. Where, I mean, the other one, though, I think, in terms of words around biomass, the other interesting word to carry in your head is embedded energy. That is to say, when you build a solar panel, right, you have to have electricity to run the machines that make the solar panel. And the question is, how much electricity do you have to expend to build a solar panel, and how soon do you recoup that electricity with what's generated by the photocell, right, Mariah? So, I mean, you've got too much embedded energy in your solar panel. Well, that's not great either, right?
Yeah, but I don't have direct facts on this, but I'd say I'm 97% certain that the LCAs, the life cycle analyses for solar panels show that even if with that embedded energy, they're still significantly better than, burning biomass or fossil fuels. Yeah.
No, I think that's yeah.
It's so a good question to ask, of course. You know, that you got to look into the life cycle analyses.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of ways to cut the, I agree with you. I think that the solar cells, certainly in the modern times, are relatively inexpensive energy-wise. There's low embedded energy in the solar panel, and you gain back, you're winning soon after you install the solar panel.
And,
yeah, there's a lot around the biome because there's so many topics there. But so we're back to the idea that Massachusetts is considering using biomass, right, which is wood fiber, and burning it. So there's a lot of politics behind that with this guy up in Maine who's a bit of a loose cannon, Governor LePage, right? But Governor Baker is trying to use the biomass to satisfy the carbon dioxide emissions requirements. And the question is that fair? I mean, that's a legitimate question for people to think about. So if you're listening to this podcast, no matter what state you're in, that's a reasonable question to say. Is biomass a renewable resource? And I guess if we took a vote here amongst the three of us, we'd probably all say ixnay, trees are not biomass, right?
I like my lungs.
I like my lungs the way they are.
Yeah.
All right. Well, look, we got to. That's a interesting topic. I mean, there's, as I say, with this clean energy stuff, there's a lot of interesting little things to go down. All right, biomass. So look, we got to put it down there. We'll put up some links to the things that that matter. The links that matter here will have every important link scrupulously documented. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, absolutely everything you can look up. You could know everything about biomass after reading the blog we're going to get. We'll have that link at massclimateaction.org/blog. That's the blog with the SoundCloud link. You can find us also on Facebook at /massclimateaction. That'll take you back through to the blog where you can listen to the podcast. And, of course, you can listen to us directly on your smartphone using applications like Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Overcast, Podbean, SoundCloud, and blah, blah, blah. You can find us, of course, on iTunes, the mother of all podcast providers. So we'll close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the reckless policies of the new administration not be accepted as normal, and that the United States put a long-term and equitable price on carbon. So thanks for being here, DR.
Thanks.
Thanks for being here, Mariah.
Thank you. Glad you're back.
Thanks for all you guys for listening. We'll talk again soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool.